This is Commissioner Susan Wiefald. I'd like to open the hearing on case number PU06491. And this has to do with the acquisition of Cascade Natural Gas by Montana Dakota Utilities Company and Great Plains Natural Gas Company. And the we have quite a number of people here in the room, including Commissioner Clark and Commissioner Kramer. First, I'd like to go to Commissioner Kramer because it's in his portfolio and ask him if he has any welcoming.
Well, just say good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. This is a project that, an acquisition that is that piqued my interest, of course, not only because it's my portfolio and because it's, you know, because obviously our duty to make sure that it is in the public interest, but it's, to me, it's been kind of a fascinating acquisition for a local company. And as much as anything, I guess I've been curious about it. I've followed the news, the little bit of news that there's been on it in the financial news sources, as well as kind of following it from the Pacific Northwest a little bit to see how they're taking it up there. But I've read the entire filing, and I think staff's done a good job on it. It's not overly complex. It doesn't seem to be, but I appreciate the opportunity to at least have a little visit about it today. So,
thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Clark.
Just welcome, everyone. Thanks.
All right, and now we'll do introductions. First, we'll start with staff, starting with Mike Diller.
Mike Diller.
All right, and if you folks will stand up and yell your names out so we can get you on the record.
Jerry Leon.
Bill Benning.
Tom Rafferty.
All right, and if MDU folks will introduce themselves, please.
Don Ball from MDU.
Dan Kuntz, MDU Resources.
Tammy Averly, Montana Dakota.
Rita Mulkern, Montana Dakota.
Thank you for those nice, loud voices for your announcing your names. And then is there anyone on the telephone today? All right. And with that, we will go to MDU for their presentation regarding the acquisition of Cascade Natural Gas.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, Don Ball from MDU. MDU Resources and Cascade entered an agreement and plan of merger back in July of 06. As part of and under this agreement, MDU Resources would acquire Cascade Natural Gas Corporation. The shareholder approval was required on the part of Cascade shareholders. That was granted on October 27th of 06. And we subsequently filed this application on November 7th. Seeking approval from this commission under section 490406. I've taken the liberty of giving you a couple of handouts. The first one is a color system map of Cascade's service area. Their headquarters is in Seattle, although they do not provide natural gas service in Seattle. They serve about 235,000 customers in Washington and Oregon, and you can see their various regions broken out on this map. The state lines are not really good on this map, but they just do serve in those two states. About 75% of their customers are located in the state of Washington, and 25% are located in Oregon. The Cascade operation, we believe, is a very well-run operation. They provided good, reliable service to their customers for a number of years. They have a customer growth rate ranging from 3 to 5% a year, which is substantially higher than the national average and a whole lot higher than either Montana, Dakota's, or Great Plains customer growth rates. Just to give you a little comparison, Montana, Dakota serves about 228,000 natural gas customers in a four-state area, and Great Plains serves about 23,000 natural gas customers in western Minnesota and, of course, in Wahpeton, North Dakota. there are similarities between Montana, Dakota, Great Plains, and Cascade, one being we're all local distribution companies. We both serve a mixture of residential, commercial, industrial-type customers in what are really, you know, mid- to small-sized communities We have multiple states. The service areas are both in areas of relatively low population density. So there are quite a bit of similarities between the two. Referring to your second handout, which is really a summary organization chart of MDU resources, if this deal goes through and we are successful in acquiring Cascade, Cascade will become what's called a first-tier subsidiary of MDU Resources Group. And you'll see them right on the box right below MDU Resources Group. That would put them on a level consistent with Centennial Energy Holdings, Inc., which is also a first-tier subsidiary. You'll notice that all of the other MDU Resources activities other than the utility operations are lodged under Centennial Energy Holdings. You'll see Centennial Energy Resources, WBI Holdings, Knife River, MDU Construction Services. Now, Montana, Dakota, and Great Plains are not subsidiaries of MDU Resources. They are divisions of MDU Resources Group. So there will be a distinction there. Cascade will retain its name. It will operate as a separate company, and it will have its own debt and its own credit ratings. It will operate as part of MDU Resources Utility Business Unit, like Montana, Dakota, Great Plains.
Yeah, explain that to me, because from the chart and from the it looks like Cascade is separate from Great Plains Natural Gas Company and MDU Utilities Company. It looks like MDU Resources Group is purchasing Cascade Natural Gas Corporation. But I understand from your application that it's not only MDU Resources, but Great Plains Natural Gas and MDU Utilities Company that are purchasing. So explain that to me.
I guess which piece would you like me to explain? The fact that they're going to be operated
like
as a business unit?
Directly underneath. Right. MDU Resources Group. So if I were to look at this chart, I would say that MDU Resources Group is purchasing Cascade Natural Gas Corporation.
They are.
From this chart.
But you have to understand that Montana, Dakota, Great Plains, and MDU Resources are really the same entity. We operate the utility as kind of a separate standalone division, but they are one and the same entity. They're the same corporation. And that was done for historical reasons to avoid the old Public Utility Holding Act. When we looked at acquiring Cascade, we tried to decide whether we wanted to put them in a separate subsidiary like what's shown on this box, or do we want to make them another division. There were a couple of advantages of leaving them where they're at. The number one was that if we put them as a division comparable to basically merged them totally together with MDU Resources, we would trigger deferred taxes, which would not be a good idea. Obviously, it was pretty significant. The other thing is it kind of assists in the, at least in the interim till this transition is complete, kind of the ring fencing idea that keeps their operations. But so they're going to be a separate entity, a separate corporation. But that being said, the intent is that they will be operated as part of the utility family, that business unit. We have as you're aware, an aggregate business unit with all the Knife River companies in. We have the WBI Holdings business, which has got the pipeline and Fidelity as a business unit. They will become, even though there's a number of separate corporations under each of those business units, they operate as kind of a family of companies. Cascade will be part of our utility family. Mr. Imsdahl will be the CEO of all those utilities, but then Cascade will have its own president who will report directly to Mr. Imsdahl. And then, as stated in our application, there will be some sharing of resources, hopefully between Cascade and the other utility divisions, such as Montana, Dakota, and Great Plains. For example, I suspect that Mr. Ball will have some relationship with the Regulatory Affairs Department at Cascade in some sort of a dotted line capacity and working together. Perhaps we'll be able to share some resources within the Regulatory Affairs Department with the idea of hopefully saving some money at both. Does that kind of help clarify that?
Would you have been able to execute it in this way prior to PUCA repeal? Or would Cascade, would they have had to be a part of a division of MDU?
I'm not an expert in PUCA, and it was repealed already, so we never had to look into that. I suspect that may have forced us to make them a division. That may have been enough to trigger a holding company, probably.
It may have, but
I don't know for certain. We never really got into that.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, Cascade is going to maintain its headquarters or its operating headquarters in Washington. They're going to have their own accounting documentation and financial records. The regulators there will continue to have access to all of that information as they have in the past. And basically, the Cascade is going to operate a whole lot like it does today. They'll have a continuing strong local presence in their service area with the appropriate employees, a management team on the ground in Washington, that kind of thing. I guess from a, why did we want to buy Cascade? Well, MDU Resources has had a plan that it needs to grow its utility operation. And this was a good strategic fit for doing that. You know, it roughly doubles the size of our natural gas distribution operations at the corporate level. And, you know, Cascade, as I indicated, has a very strong customer growth. You know, something that we don't enjoy in this area. So from that for those reasons, it was a good strategic fit for MDU Resources. And from Cascade's perspective, they thought that this transaction would be advisable because of their small size and the cost of complying with all of the public company requirements, you know, reporting requirements at the SEC level, and those kinds of things. They also were impressed with us because they believe that we're a company that's committed to continue to provide quality service to customers. And that we'll be there for the long haul. And they also recognize that MDU's size and financial strength would be of benefit to them in meeting their future capital needs. You know, with a customer growth in that level, you can imagine that there are some capital needs to extend those distribution systems, to beef up, you know, some of the main distribution pipe. Now, in terms of an impact that we're going to see in North Dakota for Montana, Dakota, or Great Plains customers, or for that matter, for any Montana, Dakota customers, there really shouldn't be any. This deal will be transparent to our North Dakota customers. If we hadn't made announcements, things like that, I don't think anyone would even know that we would have this. So we're looking at no significant changes in operations in North Dakota, no significant changes in provision of service to our customers. There is no impact on rates or tariffs from this transaction on North Dakota. We're not asking for any rate changes. We're also not asking for any rate changes in the Cascade service area as part of this transaction. And, of course, there will be no change in your access to, you know, the books and records of Montana, Dakota, so that you can do your job. I think that, I forgot a couple. There will also be no effect on Montana, Dakota's or Great Plains' cost of capital or its capital structure. None whatsoever. And, of course, from the local perspective, we will continue to have people operate Montana, Dakota, and Great Plains, as we have in the past. There are potentially some long-term strategic customer benefits for future efficiencies. You know, sharing expertise, spreading certain administrative costs over a broader base. You know, these things don't happen overnight, but over time. We expect to see some efficiencies on both the Cascade system and the Montana-Dakota Great Plains system. That should help us, you know, stay out a little longer from asking for a rate case.
Yeah, one of the things that occurred to me when I first saw it was when you talked about the role that you all played, albeit maybe not a dotted line role. I like that. Perhaps it actually could be an allocation of cost to twice as many customers, if you will, to some degree.
To some degree, yes.
Realizing they, as you explained, they still have their own administration. They're going to be very local and all that.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent it's possible, it'd be nice to be able to track that over the next few years here, because regulators often hear about, you know, we'll have some saving. That's great. That's why I think generally we have been open to deals like this. But at the same time, that has to be something that we take into account in a rate proceeding somewhere down the line. So to the degree that can be accounted for, I think that.
I guess the prime example will be, public company costs. Mm-hmm. You know, to comply with all of the reporting requirements, you know, Cascade has to do all of that. They have to have their separate board of directors. They pay their fees and those kinds of things. If they become part of MDU, well, then all of that goes away on the Cascade side, but it will be offset because those costs will be incurred at the MDU resources level. And, of course, Cascade will be assigned some of those costs. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that we're looking at this point is that both Cascade and Montana, Dakota, and Great Plains need a new customer information system. You know, those systems are very expensive to develop. And, you know, the process has kind of started already, but it's a five-year process.
Be Excel.
But
I don't think I'd take
it. We might be better moving down the path. We are. But, you know, there's an opportunity as we move into the future to spread the cost of a new CIS system over, in this case, gas companies double the size. We also had to make some other regulatory filings other than here. There was one federal filing that was required under the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act. It was filed with the Federal Trade Commission. And that has to do with antitrust implications. They issued what they call an early termination letter, I think November 27. So that's a done deal now at the federal level. We've had to file in Minnesota as well as here. And in Minnesota, the Department of Commerce, who is the advocacy agency, has submitted their comments to the commission on the filing recommending approval. Discussions with the staff of the Minnesota Commission indicate that they hope to have that on their agenda on March 8, which will be very good. That's the date we had asked for in Minnesota as well as here. We've also filed with, of course, the Washington Commission and the Oregon Commission. Those proceedings are moving along at various stages. Both of those proceedings have built-in settlement conference dates. So they're open to the possibility of settling these cases before we go the whole nine yards.
I have a question, sure. And that relates to on our NARUC level, it's PUCA, right?
The repealed PUCA? Act?
Yeah, the repealed act. I sometimes get mixed up between PUCA and something else. Since that was repealed, some states have put in place their own safeguards that PUCA used to provide on the national level. I'm wondering if our staff has looked at any of the PUCA safeguards that states are considering when they approve mergers at this time?
Staff has not looked into that in any depth at all. It's one of the things that's on my list of to-dos, but it's quite a ways down the list. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, if that becomes more important to the commission, then we certainly can move it up on the list. But I've not explored or looked into writing a rule requiring ring fencing or any of that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, I don't know that other states have gone to, I think they have just adapted some of the requirements that used to be in, like reporting requirements, for example. That used to be in PUCA, to the federal government, have adopted some of those for their own state. And I just wondered whether, since this is the first merger that's come before our commission since that happened, whether we should at least look at what other states are doing in that regard to see if there's any things that we may want to consider.
I guess whatever direction I receive from the commission, that's we can certainly look at those kinds of things. I've not done that, so I don't know if I mean, for purposes of this case, I'm not sure we need to do that for this case.
What's almost set up with that built in?
Yeah,
those principles built in.
I think what you're talking about would take a good bit of research if you're talking about looking at all the other states or a good bit of the other states. That would take some time, more time than I have anyway.
I wondered if you could perhaps be in touch with the other three commissions that might be involved with this particular case to see if they have done any research on those issues. That would mean contacting Washington, Oregon, and Minnesota to see whether they are considering anything that should be built into an order that relates to PUCA reform.
Sure, I can call those three commissions.
I can tell you, commissioners, that those two states have had a number of recent merger acquisition cases come before them. Most recently, I think, the Mid-America case. And we're pretty familiar with what the requirements have been. And I don't know anything specifically in that regard in terms of structural organization. As I recall, most of the requirements in those orders dealt around with assurances that they were going to continue to have access to books and records and local presence and those sorts of things. So, but and those orders are out there. You can get them. We've got copies of a couple of the more recent ones. No one so far in our discussions, and although they're pretty early stage, has indicated any concern about the structural mechanism that we're using here. They've had some questions about, where we propose to put the acquisition and that sort of thing, and whether we keep the debt separate, but none from a standpoint of the structural organization.
So I guess basically we think that this transaction is in the public interest and that we urge your approval by March 8th. And I throw that date on the table because under the terms of the agreement, if the conditions are not met by 6 months after the agreement is signed, which is i.e. Mm-hmm. April 8th, except for approvals by the Washington and Oregon commissions, then the agreement terminates.
Mm-hmm.
But if
by April 8th. But you're suggesting March 8th so that we have 30 days built in.
Yes.
Yep.
We are.
Give you a little comfort time.
Give us a little comfort time.
Well, I think that Mr. Diller could just make a few phone calls on those PUCA issues to those other commissions and just check out in a very high-level way.
Sure.
If they have any things that they're using in their order to address anything in of those areas. And apart from that, I have no concerns.
Has staff not had some correspondence already with the Pacific Northwest states?
We have, but they didn't ask about that particular issue, and we didn't talk about it. So I don't know that was on their radar screen. So.
And the Minnesota Department of Commerce, in their comments to the commission recommending approval, did not mention anything about PUCA.
As far as what people here in the public will care about, it's And the finances, nothing changes on the MDU side, nothing employee-wise, anything right. like that.
No, only to the extent that long-term, if we're able to operate right. more efficiently.
Right. But we're not looking at any immediate job
no,
cuts or anything.
No,
like that.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
You know, I, depending upon where it, you know where some job is made, there may be a few increases here, or there you know, or might be a few increases there, or whatever. But you know, it's still a little early to make that
but there's
determination.
Not like
but no,
100-person call center that's closing here
yeah,
that
right.
gets moved
something
out.
Something like that.
Well,
I can tell you. I mean, I really have spent a little more of my emotion on this one than a lot of, only because it's, I think it's from the very beginning was a nice acquisition. I mean, it looked right. Yeah, at first blush, and then the more that I read into it, the more I read about it, and I even went so far as to read the proxy statement from the other side, because clearly their shareholders had a little yeah. decision to make. Oh, and I wondered immediately about the 23% premium of the stock price, but when you talk about a 3-5% growth area, that to me that explains why there was a premium paid. It was also the first red flag, saying we want to make sure that our customers or our ratepayers aren't paying that premium. But I can see why you would pay it at this point.
So well, the other thing
I've
is
also followed their stock price a little bit, and it caught right up and it's stayed there ever since. So,
as we mentioned in our application, our primary reason here was this acquisition was strategic to help maintain the balance. A better balance, at least, between our non-regulated activities and our regulated activities. You know, the company's been extremely successful in the last few years in growing its unregulated activities, and it's kind of got out of balance from that standpoint to the point where the utility was a pretty small sister in the whole organization. And the analysts like that balance, so that you know helped make that premium more palatable, if you will, to help that strategic balance in the larger corporate organization.
We have a memo from staff on this particular case. Mike Diller, do you want to enter for the record any information about that?
Well, staff just reviewed it from the perspective of how is this going to affect North Dakota ratepayers and specifically cost of service. And you know, we looked at the cost of capital issue, and we believe that it's not going to affect the cost of capital. Rate base isn't an issue because none of the premium is going to be passed through. And, you know, the other leg of cost of service is net operating income. And in the long term, there may be some benefits to net operating income through consolidation efforts or or whatever, and so in the long term, it looks like it'll be a benefit to North Dakota ratepayers, and that's pretty much all. After we thought about it a lot and looked at it, the more I guess, kind of like Commissioner Kramer's saying, the more we looked at it, the more reasonable and the better it looked. So we recommend approval.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your memo. And then is there anything further anyone else would like to share?
Just remind me again of the two boards, of course, unanimously supported it. Cascade shareholders.
The two boards did, and the Cascade shareholders voted for approval. Our shareholders don't have to approve.
Right. But they vote, and that required 2/3 of the shares, as I recall, Cascade.
I believe that was correct. It was more than a majority, as I recall.
Yeah, it was more than a majority. I think it was 2/3.
Yeah, it would be based on the share.
I think it was 2/3.
There's this commission that has to approve.
In Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Montana and Wyoming do not require approvals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Washington and Oregon do.
Right.
And they're say, moving along. We file our cases, and there's been... we've had one technical conference already in Oregon. There's one next week in Washington.
Yes.
So we've had public input hearings. And
they want to check you
Oregon.
Out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do.
Those have all gone well, too.
Clearly, so. They're, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I bet they're glad you're not a cosmetic company buying their... They're probably favorably impressed that you are familiar with the business. Okay, which is allowed these days. All right. we will close the hearing on case number, where are we? PU 06491. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.